magical place we could go. So close your eyes and make a wish for the skies with the angriest, flappiest birds, and the seas with ridiculous fish. The Dutch Arcade Show is here again. It's Friday night and I'm with my friends, Eli, Jared, and Mike most of the time. Come on, let's go to the Dutch Arcade Show.
Oh, hey, what is up, and welcome to the Touch Arcade Show, episode number 397. We are closing in on that number 400, which is pretty exciting.
I'm waiting
exciting.
For episode 420, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, we'll get there, too. Maybe by next year's 420, we can time it right. my name is Jared, and with me is Eli, and together we're the hosts of this wonderful podcast. And let's see. What else do I have to say about this intro?
This podcast is sponsored by Coors Light. Taste the
sponsored
Rockies.
Sponsored by Coors Light. We get tons and tons of kickbacks from Coors Light just for mentioning them.
Actually, that is not completely inaccurate.
Remember, have you got free Coors Light stuff?
Well, remember when that Coors Light game came out?
Yeah.
And the people just emailed me. I don't know how they found. They found my personal email, which I don't know where they got it from, but you know, and it was one of those confused, hey, we're launching an iPhone game. I don't know what to do. And usually I would just delete those. I'm like, man, I don't have time for this kind of stuff.
But you saw Coors Light and were oh.
Well, no, at the time I didn't see Coors Light. It was a complete stroke of luck because I was I don't know, I'll be nice to this person instead of just deleting this. hey, you know, it's better for you to email tips at touchrk.com, but you know, if you have any specific questions, I can maybe help you out, but I don't have a ton of time to walk you through too much. And they responded, they're like, oh, well, we're making this Coors Light game. And I was like, what? And they sent me a swag pack and I got they sent me a Coors Light cardigan.
Oh,
some Coors Light socks. And then FedExed me a six pack of Coors Light.
What?
And it was it was ridiculous because it was FedEx overnight, a six pack of Coors Light,
$40 to send you a $5.
I was man, if you guys just would have been here's a $5 bill, go buy some Coors Light.
That's pretty cool though. Probably 2012, 2013, I think, they released a game called Coors Light Refreshmen. And it was a beat 'em up. It was Final Fight, but it was these mountain climber miner folks that were trying to anymore. Oh, it's long gone. It's super long gone.
That's something I should go after for Game Club.
Yes, Game Club that thing back. But it was actually a really good beat 'em up. It was a Final Fight kind of beat 'em up game. And
surprisingly good.
Yeah, surprisingly good, totally free. I mean, it was one giant ad, and it was pretty short. But, that was one of my, I don't know, I liked that game a lot.
It reminded me of the Stranger Things game in that, it's completely free and you would expect an adver game to just be shitty and not worth even looking at, but it actually was shockingly decent.
I would agree.
so
anyway, just to put a button on that intro, this is the Touch Arcade Show for toucharcade.com, the number one website for mobile gaming news on the internet. And if you like us, go to patreon.com/toucharcade and help us out. And if you like us even more, do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon. And there, now I feel like I've actually done a sort of intro.
Nice.
Moving right along, did you get your Galaxy Fold pre-order today?
No. Oh, yeah. We should talk about that to button up the...
So we were talking last week about, the Fold drama that was happening with all the review units breaking and stuff. And we were both kind of it comes out next week. I kind of can't wait till next week's podcast. There will definitely be some reviews out impressions, videos, and blah, 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 blah. And between then and now, Samsung has put the entire launch on hold. And they have...
Indefinitely.
Indefinitely. They said, I don't think it'll be forever, but there's definitely no, it's going to be a couple months or anything like that. It's we don't know when we're going to launch it. And they swooped up all the review units back.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Did you see the iFixit drama?
Yeah, that just happened today. They had to pull iFixit, that website that,
To be fair, they asked them nicely to take it down. But so what was interesting about that specific teardown, though, is that they So iFixit, as Jared was saying, is this like really, really cool website. Like one of my favorite, like if you were into that like book series, what was it, The Way Things Work or something like that, that yeah, showed like right. the like exploded diagrams of like everyday yeah. things. Like iFixit is like that, but like modern tech stuff.
And an amazing resource if you ever have to like pull your Nintendo Switch apart for any reason, oh, or yeah. you know, any other electronic well, device.
That's how they make their money, is like you Google mm-hmm. like how to fix Nintendo Switch screen, yeah. and like they have the whole walkthrough, and then like yeah. every part you need, like they also mm-hmm. sell.
Yeah.
So it's like an ingenious website yeah. as far as like making money is concerned. But so they did a teardown and like really analyzed the phone. And what was interesting is they did this after. Or maybe the analysis was after they started having mm-hmm. problems. I don't remember like the exact timeline of it, but like they came to the conclusion that the problem was that when you had the phone folded, mm-hmm. there was like, you know, obviously the spine of the phone isn't mm-hmm. completely sealed.
Yeah.
So they were speculating what was happening was like just like pocket dust and stuff like that was like getting in like the spine of the phone. Mm-hmm. And then when you open it up, that mm-hmm. like dust was effectively being like wedged up from just yeah. like the natural opening action of the phone.
Yeah. Oh, and it makes like, total sense.
Once you got enough of that in, it would like, you know, cause like a small bulge, which, you know, would just mm-hmm. like push up against the screen enough to like cause the weird display artifacting and
yeah.
everything else.
Well, so. Think about like even your iPhone for years now, you know, I guess really the only port on an iPhone anymore is like the Lightning port, but there's no real like access holes. You know what I mean? Like everything else is a yeah. button. And yeah, you can get some dust and stuff in the cracks of your buttons or whatever. Or the earpiece hole, I guess, is kind of a thing. But I mean, when you had like headphone jacks and stuff like that, like it was not uncommon to get just a buildup of gunk in there, mm-hmm. dust and oils and, you know, whatever else. And yeah. so imagine having something like that, but that leads to behind your screen. Mm-hmm. And that's like what the Fold is doing, which I think is crazy that somehow got past their quality checking department. That like that's so unacceptable to let anything get behind your screen like that.
Yeah, it's wild. And you know, like something I didn't really think about with that until I saw that teardown. I was like, oh damn, like that means that this phone is not water resistant at all either.
Yeah.
Which is weird, like how like when the first what was it, the iPhone 7 was the first one that had any level of waterproofing, or the
maybe,
iPhone
yeah.
iPhone 7, yeah, that sounds right. That initially like seemed like such an exotic feature. It's like, oh damn, like I can get my phone a little wet, it's not a problem, like that's so crazy. And now like I'm not like super flippant about it or anything, but like, you know, my phone's like dirty or whatever, I'll just like rinse it off, you know. Yeah. Or like I've taken it in like the pool with me, or like we'll have it in my pocket like when I'm, you know, doing stuff around water.
Yeah.
Or like going, no, same here, you know, like yeah, like in a lake or whatever on a tube, I'll just have my phone in my hand and stuff, which is like
yeah.
so crazy to just like have in such a short amount of time gone from like, oh my God, like I can't believe this can like be splashed, to like, yeah, yeah, I don't know, I just have it in the pocket of my bathing suit. No big deal.
Yeah, right.
So it would be kind of weird to go back to needing to worry about that. Like, I think that I would almost like mess my phone up because I would just like assume I could do these things.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it's not good.
Yeah.
And one of the best things I've read about the Galaxy Fold this week, it's actually something older that got leaked on Daring Fireball. And it's, let me see if I can find what I did with it. It's called
Claim Chowder.
It's called The Samsung Galaxy Fold is the Homer Simpson Car.
It is. It truly is.
Blog post from this guy named Patrick Thornton. And it's just super spot on in the fact that its main sort of crux is that, you know, the Homer Simpson car is like what happens when like a user tries to design something, because they have all these ideas of things they would like in something like a car,
yeah.
but they have no idea how to implement them in a way that makes sense or is, you know, good design or whatever. And so what you have to do is you have to take those things that people want, give them to actual designers to design it well, so that you don't even really have to think about it. You get the things that you want and in like a really seamless and elegant way or whatever. And the Galaxy Fold, first of all, isn't really solving a problem. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I guess the problem...
Well, I mean, it kind of is. I mean, I think it's
cool. You could say, I hate having to carry two devices, or I hate having, yeah. you know, I'd like a larger screen tablet without having to carry a tablet in a bag. I want something that fits in my pocket. But the first problem with that is that the Fold, the way that it does fold, it's so like long and thick that it does, it's not very pocketable. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure, you know, like certain jeans are fine or whatever, and especially like men's jeans, but like women, and a lot of women carry their phone like in their back pocket and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Jeans are always tighter.
I've noticed that's become a thing. I see all sorts of people doing that.
Everybody does that. I could never do that. But
I don't under, like, do you just take your phone out of your pocket every time you sit down, or do you sit on your phone?
I know, like, a lot of people just sit on them, and they were like, oh, it's fine. Yeah.
That's weird.
So, whatever.
What about Bendgate?
I know, right? But so, you know, you look at this thing, and it's like, okay, it's not very pocketable when it's folded. I mean, I guess it is, but is that really better than the phones we have now? Is it worth the trade-off to get like this larger tablet size screen? And then the second thing is like the tablet size is not much more than an iPad mini. And right. It's sort of in between.
It's kind of like aspect a ratio
tablet.
Too. It's like square.
Yeah, it's like, it's larger, but it's not like greatly larger to where it's a huge benefit over something that's just like a really bigger phone or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the third point he makes is that, the outside phone screen, when it's folded and you're using it as a phone, is just god awful. And I've never really noticed this before, but it's like doesn't take up the whole front of the device at all. And it's not even centered properly. And it's just like, it looks very, very out of place.
Well, but that's why I think that it'll be interesting to see what happens with the other folding phones that were also shown at Mobile World Congress.
I think there are a lot smarter designs already. The Hawaii one and stuff.
Yeah. Because like that one, it's kind of like the opposite of the Galaxy Fold in that like the screen is on the outside instead of on the inside. But what I like about that one is that when you have it folded, like either screen is like a kind of sort of normal narrow smartphone screen.
Right. Yeah.
And then when you open it, it's like both screens are side by side, which is
Cool. That makes a lot. That design makes way more sense.
I didn't realize that the Galaxy Fold had such a shitty like front screen until it was pointed out in reviews.
Really bad. Like it looks, it's just odd looking that it's like a normal phone's like screen that's just like taped onto the front of something much larger. And it's just all kinds of bad. And so like his point is sort of like, okay, like I think this is a great idea, but I think it's very much in the prototype stage right now. And I think the thing they're selling for $2,000 is very much a prototype that should not be being sold to consumers. And then you throw in these problems where there's these giant recesses that, you know, stuff can get in and break the screen and all this other stuff. And it's like they were days away from selling these to customers who are paying $2,000 for them with these huge kind of like glaring problems that really should have been figured out, you know, in some sort of beta phase or some sort of quality control or whatever. Like there's no way that this looks like a, ready for market kind of device.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking? I wonder if, like, so there's an interesting argument to be made about, like, how you want, like, phone manufacturers to be making, like, crazier shit like this. Because it is a little boring how, like, everything looks like the iPhone now.
Right.
And I almost wonder if, like, their screw-up wasn't, like, really marketing this as, like, hey, this is, like, a alpha prototype that we're doing a very limited release of, like, you know, only a few thousand units to be available. Like, if you want to take the leap of faith with us on this, like, new forward-facing phone design, like, that's cool. But just keep in mind, this is, like, a, you know, slightly more mass-produced prototype.
Right.
So buyer beware kind of thing. Instead of, like...
That would have been a lot smarter, I think.
Because at that point, like, I think it could have been easy to be, like, all right, well, like the reviews were kind of shitty and like this thing's kind of broken, but like Samsung was really like upfront with being like, hey, this is just kind of a prototype that we're selling a few units of to, you know, because people are excited about it kind of thing.
Yeah.
Instead of the pitch being like, hey, this is the fucking new thing. This is the future. Like this, you know, you want the new Samsung Galaxy phone because this is it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like it's kind of like a, you know, hardware early access or something like that. I think for like the most diehard early adopter people, I think would have been a cool way to position this where it wouldn't have felt like such an unbelievable PR blunder.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I kind of agree. And I think there's plenty of people that would have been like super down to be like, I want to be on the cutting edge of technology and have this foldable device. And I will even pay for it knowing full well that it's going to be like a beta. I don't think it would be any problem finding people to actually be part of that and get behind that idea. But yeah, selling it like it's something that's like the fanciest new best thing out there. I mean, even when they figure out this folding thing and whenever this thing does come out and the other companies have them coming out and stuff like that, it's going to still be a few years before they get really good. You know what I mean? Like, there's going to be problems that come up when you start getting hundreds of thousands to millions of people using this type of thing.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to, you know, iterate on them year over year. And eventually, just like regular smartphones, really, they'll get better as time goes on. And so I don't really see this being like a super everyday regular, you know, this is how smartphones are now type thing.
At least not until we see some major advances. And
yeah, I think it's three to 5 years down the road before we're at that point.
It's just really weird to me that they like tried to sell this as like a mass market phone, because like thinking about it more, like back when Nokia was more relevant than they are now, kind of like before the iPhone, like they had an entire like stable of super crazy devices that they would that like Popular Science would write about. They'd show off at like CES and stuff, and like you'd look at these and be like, wow, that's actually like really cool. I'd love to have this phone. But like there's a reason they didn't release them, because like they didn't really do well outside of a very like controlled demo and stuff like that. Like I remember one Nokia thing that I saw that I thought was really cool is that they built this kind of like smartphone thing that you could like line the phones up, and like any kind of like, so if you had three phones next to each other, it would be like a wide screen, or if you could do two on top and do like a long screen, the phone, like when it like magneted together, however connected, would like realize what orientation the phones were in, which is just like a lot like the Galaxy Fold net, like, oh, that's a really cool idea, but like, is it something people really care about and is going to actually work in a day-to-day kind of basis? So I don't know. It's interesting, I guess, how this is concluded so far.
I'm still going to be following this. I mean, I'm still interested to see what happens with foldable tech and whatever, but this has just been a massive disaster. And John Gruber's sort of point about all this stuff was like, there's something wrong at Samsung that this even became a thing, that somebody along the line didn't stop this from happening or whatever. There's some sort of disconnect between, you know, the management or the technology department or whatever, to where somebody at some point in the line had to either completely ignore these problems, which is bad enough, or be unaware and go forward anyway, which is even worse. So
it kind of like reminds me of like the car or the phone equivalent to like those like concept cars you see at like the auto show and stuff, where it's
which look really cool, but like,
exactly,
you know, they're years away from being like a practical like consumer thing. You can't just go buy this spaceship looking like, you know, VW bus or whatever.
So I don't know.
Anyway, Galaxy Fold.
I guess we'll see. So we could actually parlay that into, did you see the story on MacRumors this week about the 5G stuff?
Oh.
So the big question, like with 5G, so, you know, if you 5G is probably realistically going to change everything, because it'd just be like a absolutely absurd amount of bandwidth that anyone within range of a cell tower, which, you know, we're currently podcasting with Jared over 5G right now. Like, I think it's really like the claims about it realistically being like world changing technology is not hyperbole. But the question is, so if you're like, so I have Verizon, I have, you know, air quotes, unlimited data, but that comes with the caveat of like, once you exceed like 20 gigs in a month or something like that, like it goes down to, you know, like 3G speeds or whatever is super slow, or, you know, like you don't get your full speed after that. So people have been like wondering like what's going to happen with 5G, because 5G is fast enough that you can exceed your 20 gig allotment in like minutes. So I thought this article was kind of interesting, because the AT&T CEO, as part of an interview with The Verge, you know, on the question of like how 5G pricing is going to work, he kind of says that he said, I'd be very surprised as we move into wireless if the pricing regime doesn't, or regimen doesn't look something like the pricing you see in fixed lines. Like, so, you know, you can offer gigabit speed to people that want to pay for it, or, you know, 500 meg or whatever else, which I guess is kind of an interesting thing to think about. If you like buy your cellular plan, like you do your home connection. Because like that's the interesting thing about 5G is that like like, so it's got like a theoretical maximum download of something like 10 gigabits or something like that, but like there's nothing that exists now that any normal person would ever need that much data for reason.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I the speeds I get now with my Verizon home 5G stuff is just ridiculously beyond anything I need. And so if I could like pay cheaper to have less speed, I would.
Yeah, it's good. So it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. I don't know. I just thought that was kind of an interesting story because like people have really been speculating like, all right, well, how's this going to work? Because I don't want
to. Well, they kind of have to do something because even if you get, you know, your bandwidth capabilities, you know, increased with 5G or whatever, if everybody's out there being like, well, I'm just going to watch 4K videos all day long, every day, you know, that's going to eat all that stuff up. And then you're in the same spot that you were anyway. So I feel like rationing it out based on what people are willing to pay for and what people think they need is the way to do it.
Yeah. Sorry if you can hear my dogs running around upstairs. They're,
oh, you silly dogs.
Probably chasing you the silly cat. Dogs.
Let's go start at the other end here of the stories. So this is something that,
I can shill my stuff.
You can shill your game club. Cube Rally World is the next game you've announced, which is going to be what, this Monday?
No, it's out now. If you go to gameclub.io/beta, you can get the test flight link right now.
Right now? This came out on this Monday then? Is that what it was?
Yeah, next Monday is going to be Run, Rue, Run.
Oh, I have it. You're right. You're right. Which, let's see. So this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the seventh game?
Yes, the eighth game will be Run, Rue, Run.
Run, Rue, Run, and that's on Monday?
Yes.
Man, you guys have been sticking to your weekly releases.
I know it's a lot of stress to do it. We've had some like down to the wire,
really,
releases, but yeah, we're.
I will say I'm a fan. So I have a game club folder where I have all your betas, but I'm a fan of how you do your little game club coloring in the icon.
Really? All right, so this is kind of an interesting kind of debate that we're having.
Okay.
Both internally and with the people in the game club Discord.
Okay.
What in the fuck is going on? So I'm sorry if that's loud. I wanted to do something that was like donut games.
Yeah.
You know how like donut games
like a little
games,
badge
like,
number or whatever.
Yeah, like a badge and a number.
Yeah.
And but a lot of people are like, I don't know, like that would kind of like mess me up if I had a folder that had like game number like 7, 12, 22, and 6. You know, not all of them. And some people really like kind of like how all the icons match and I don't know. I was surprised that the donut game numbering didn't get
more traction.
Get more traction. I thought I always
love that because I love having the whole set and they all have the exact same style icon and they're all numbered or whatever. But here's some next level strat for you is that you can now implement like icon changing as of a couple iOS versions. So like for instance, that's how my Food Network app has Guy Fieri on the front.
Oh yeah,
choose whatever you wanted. So
I don't think I even have an app that does that, or if it does, I don't.
Very few do, and I think it's just developers don't realize it's a thing that you can do. But I think it's pretty handy. Like when I come across ones that can do it, I'll always like mess with it because I think it's a cool thing to be able to kind of customize, you know, how you have your app or whatever.
That is an interesting idea.
Yeah, maybe you could throw some options. You could have the OG original version. You could have your Game Club colored version. You could have a badged version.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
I'll steal that.
But anyway, Cube Rally World, pretty fun game from Jared Bailey, who the very original was Cube Rally Racer, which was this sort of silly game. 2010 or 2011, was that about the time?
I think earlier. Sorry,
I was like, what was that?
My computer is mad at me that my hard drive is getting close to full.
Oh, but yeah, he was, it might have been earlier than that, but it was just this really fun blocky, before voxels became a thing, this was like a voxel game. There was like a rally racing game. And then Cube Rally World is sort of like an on-rails runner version of rally racing.
What's interesting about the series is that like, so the original I didn't remember this until I like started like looking into these games when we first got them, but like Cube Rally Racer, you had free controls. Like you can just
turn and
drift and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then Cube Rally Redline, which is actually like a super free to play version, came out after that. And that's when they introduced the lane based racing.
Oh, okay.
And everyone was like, this is cool, but there's like no point to it. Like, I'm not unlocking anything or doing anything cool or whatever. And then Cubed Rally World came out, which was like Cubed Rally Redline, kept the lane base racing and added like a ridiculous amount of unlockables to get.
It cross-erodified itself.
Yeah, but what's neat about this game specifically is that every additional thing that you unlock gives you a different like track segment style.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So it's like, imagine it's like cross-erodifying if every like screen and a half and crossy road you switch characters and then like the game world also shifted with that character. Because like if you have the cow, like you're running in like a stampede of cows and like you're the tank, you're like evading monsters and it's a cool game.
No, that's awesome. I loved all these games actually. What's nice about the kind of guided lane based version is that because of the like viewpoint and stuff, the free control original version was so hard to control.
Yeah.
Like you had to practice like crazy and so many people just didn't get it. And so I think that's why that game kind of got not the recognition it maybe deserved. So I think kind of streamlining it was a smart move.
I really liked that game, but like it had like the controls were so tricky to get. Cause you would get in these like situations where like you drifted too far and you'd be like going the opposite direction. Because you just turned a little bit too far, you know, which really makes me wonder, like in a world where, like in the post Flappy Bird app store, where games that are super difficult, if that would have been released at the right time, if that would have
maybe done anything. It's, you know, I think the difference is that it's complicated versus like Flappy One Touch.
Yeah,
it very much was not One Touch, but I will throw a shout out to people that like the original Cube Rally Racer, the free control one or whatever. Best Rally by Odd Rock is a really good game you should check out. That's kind of similar, and it's super short little tracks and rally racing or whatever. That's highly reminiscent, although a little bit different. But
we'll eventually release Cube Rally Racer. We got that one too, but like the there was something more tricky about updating, like it still had OpenFaint in it or was built in a
really, it was old, it's definitely old. Like
I don't remember. Yeah, that's been kind of amusing with some of these games where it's like, oh, all right, let's remove OpenFaint because that's the thing.
Oh, you have Crystal.
Yeah.
I forgot that was a thing.
Yeah.
Cool. So we'll look forward to, or you can play Cube Rally World now, gameclub.io, to get access to all 7 games that are currently on test flight. And then next week will be Run, Roo, Run, which is, man, I remember that being a real big deal when that came out. Because
I know
it was from Fifth Cell, who did Scribblenauts and
Brad Nicholson reviewed it and gave it 4.5 stars, which anyone who remembers Brad Nicholson's. Yeah, like he was always so unnecessarily harsh with review scores on mobile games. So for something to get a 4.5 from Brad Nicholson is like, that's like a 10 out of.
Well, it's really interesting because it's kind of, it back then there wasn't really that many sort of like one touch runnery kind of games like that. It really did it in a very unique way that was very suited for mobile. And it had the crazy polish that, you know, somebody like Fifth Cell will give you. So I thought that's what really made it stand out way back when. Nowadays you look at like the Rayman games and stuff, and you know, there's other stuff like that, but Run, Roo, Run was always like one of the better games in that genre of runner. So be fun to play that one again. Haven't played it probably since it came out.
So cool game. gameclub.io/beta if you don't want to wait for the email to come. That all the test flight links are there, so
secret exclusive link. Touch Arcade Show. So Noodle Cakes Golf Blitz is coming out May 2nd, which...
Are you playing this? They send you an early code?
No, they did not. Actually, if I wanted to get a build, I could get a build. I don't think they had codes yet, but I was like, I probably should get in and start playing this early so I can...
Yeah, you gotta get good. Like, so I got in mostly just badgering Ryan Noodle Cake.
Yeah.
really fun. It's... It's like, I think the best way to describe it is like, wasn't there a race mode in Stickman? Like
there
one
was.
Of the more recent.
Yeah.
Like, so it's that, but like everyone's playing at the same time.
Yeah.
And it's just like that distilled down to its like absolute essence, which I think is like, as dumbified as mobile games are getting. Like this is done like really well.
Yeah. Well, the fun thing about, so the race modes in the old games were like, you know, you would see a bunch of ghost players playing in the background and you were all kind of racing to get into the hole first or whatever, and You know, so it got really frantic as you saw someone like land on the green, but you weren't on the green yet. So you were like freaking out trying to get on the green, and then you were trying to putt or whatever. A small but significant change in Golf Blitz is that your ball has they can like hit each other.
Yeah,
collision. So you can hit other players' balls. And so you can actually like knock somebody off course if you're both like firing at the same time or whatever, which wasn't possible in the old versions.
That's what
I
love.
I think adds like the craziest wrinkle of like, you know, messing with other players and stuff. So
that's what I love about this is like, if you're not in first, or if I'm not in first place, like if I'm not obviously going to win, like I just shift my strategy to like, let me make sure that the person
just
in first
the other player
doesn't
as hard
win.
As I can.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that should be fun.
No, it's really good.
I'm gonna bug those noodle cake guys and get myself a build.
The only thing I'm curious to see how it actually shakes out because like I don't think I can buy anything in the version I have, or maybe I can, I just haven't or whatever. But I'm curious to see how the consumables sort of work out.
Yeah.
Because I can't play it anymore because it needs an update, but it's not updating, so I don't know. Whatever. So the way it works is you get these like packs of cards and it kind of seems like they're riffing on like Clash Royale's upgrade system in a way, which is cool. I mean, that works really well and people obviously like it and stuff, but I'm curious to see if it truly doesn't matter if you just like opt out of all that and just play the game for fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if kind of like you need to like have like the power-ups in queue and like all the other shit to like.
From what I understand is that you earn a bunch of power-ups just through normal play and stuff like that, and then customization is really where, you know, you might want to spend some money to get some stuff faster or whatever.
Well, but like so the way the previous Stickman Golf games is like, yeah, there was customization, but the customization also did stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't it? Like,
yeah.
Or am I crazy?
Yeah, like a sticky ball and stuff like that. And yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure how that'll work out, but I also trust them not to screw this up. Some pretty bright Canadians up there, so.
An update will be available shortly.
Oh.
God. Come on, God, noodle cake.
Get to work.
Come on, noodle cake.
Get to work, Ryan. But whatever. Next week is May 6th. Second, so that's pretty crazy. So we'll have the worldwide launch of Golf Blitz next week, and then we can all find out for ourselves how
they
bad it suck.
Something on Twitter about exclusive skins if you play it on launch day or something like that. So
oh really?
Yeah.
There you go.
I don't know. My favorite story to do with Golf Blitz was hearing about them trying to build the filter to keep people from having terrible names.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's like such a classic internet problem.
Yeah.
That I'm really surprised that there's not just like some open source library that's like the universal filter that keeps people from having names like Hitler 420 and stuff like that. You know, like, because it's a problem in like every online game. And I also say, tangentially, I'm very curious. Like, I would love to just interview the person that, when they download a game like this and ask them for a username, like their go-to is Hitler 420. And they're like, oh, that's taken. All right. Let me try racial slur 69. Yeah. Oh, I can't use that either. All right. Let me try another racial slur, but with a four instead of an A.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Like who?
I don't, I imagine that they're small children.
Who?
Preteens.
I guess.
Would be my guess.
I don't know. But anyway, so yeah, Golf Blitz, of what I've played of it, it's super cool. I'm really excited for it. Noodle Cake's first party stuff is always amazing. So
yeah, yeah.
I give this my fullest of endorsements.
Nice.
So for whatever that's worth.
Not much, but
yeah, well. Not much.
So also this week, Junk Jack got an update. And if you've never heard of Junk Jack, it's this really cool. It was kind of before Minecraft and Terraria were on the App Store. There wasn't really any crafting games or whatever. And so Junk Jack arrived and kind of provided that same sort of like open world crafting exploration sort of stuff. But it was done as like a 2D platformer. So sort of like the love child of Terraria and Minecraft. But totally built from the ground up for the touchscreen and for mobile. And it worked really well, had really good like touchscreen controls and stuff like that. Huge worlds to explore, tons of items to make, and tons of stuff to do. I mean, it really was like the sort of definitive crafting game before Minecraft came around. And even Minecraft took years to get good.
I remember when this came out back in like 2011, for the story, although I wouldn't have remembered that. I would have guessed 2012 or later. I remember this is like maybe one of the first iPhone games where I found myself like overwhelmed by like how much shit there was to do in it. Kind of like Stardew Valley sensation almost, where it's just like you play a tutorial and then the game's like, all right, have fun. And you're just like, I don't even know where to start because there's so much to do.
Well, it's one of those games where you could very easily like, you probably should go look a YouTube video up on how to get started or whatever, or else you'll just be kind of like blinded in headlights. But
that's cool though. I mean, like, because it seems like, you know, as iPhone games have gotten simpler, like it's really neat to have a game that's like actually weirdly in depth.
Yeah, this game is so much fun and there's so much cool secret stuff to do and it has a really good community and really kind of like engaged developers that are, you know, engaged with that community or whatever. And so they've added so much stuff over the years. You know, the original came out in 2011, so that was 8 years ago, which is pretty mind blowing. But so this version of Junk Jack hadn't actually received an update since last summer. So I thought it was worth pointing out this newest update it got this week isn't the craziest thing in the world, but it supports the new like iPhone XR and XS Max screens or whatever. And then add like added a haptic feedback or haptic engine option so you can kind of feel vibrations when you dig and stuff like that. It's kind of a minor update, but I still felt like it was worth pointing out just for anybody that's maybe not aware of Junk Jack, because it's super duper worth getting if you like, you know, Minecrafty kind of games and don't really feel like playing Minecraft. Or Terraria. And on the subject of Terraria, actually, I'm hoping to get a story up today or whatever, but they actually just announced a whole bunch of stuff they're bringing to Terraria Mobile soon. So that game's been kind of unloved for a few years. It kind of is in desperate need, but I still think for my money, Junk Jack is super.
Oh yeah, they're both good. I mean,
so made for mobile that it's like just
honestly,
awesome.
You could buy both of them for what, $10? Aren't they both like $5?
Like less, I think.
Yeah, I would just buy them both. Like if this is something you're interested in, because they're both like they're interestingly different.
They really are.
While like if you like one, you will almost assuredly like the other. It's just a matter of like which one is really going to click with you more, because Junk Jack seems to be more about like exploring, gathering resources and building, whereas Terraria seems like more kind of like adventure-y and action-y.
Yeah, that's totally true. So did you text Ryan?
Yeah, well, so that's what I was just gonna say. I texted him. I told you he sent me a code. I need a code to update to the new thing. But like, so here's how the power-ups work. So as you level up, you get access to more power-ups, but the power-ups you get all the time, you can also, like, you level up the power-up effectiveness, I guess, with packs, and that's what makes me wonder if there's going to be a huge difference between someone that's like, oh, I've got a level 5 Super Ball and you've only got level 1, so I'm just like shitting all over you kind of thing. Or if it's, because that kind of is the case with Clash Royale. But the Clash Royale like matchmaking system sort of is weirdly ingenious, because like if you spend a shitload of money, like you just beat some people, but then like the algorithm is like, oh, well, you're way better than all these people, so let me just match you with other people who spend a shitload of money.
Right.
Like triggers you to spend more money so you can beat those people then.
Right.
So I don't know. Yeah, but
well,
definitely
we'll see.
Play Golf Blitz, it's really good. I'm excited for Super Mario Kart Tour.
Yeah. So this week they launched the beta sign up for Mario Kart Tour.
What does that even mean?
It's so you can sign up for the beta, which is gonna happen in I think it's late May or early June.
I need to figure out how to.
Interestingly enough, it's only gonna be on Android. So they're not even doing a beta test for iOS or anything like that. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting that maybe it's just the ease of use of Google Play's stuff. But I feel like with Test Flight nowadays, it's pretty darn easy on iOS too. So whatever. But Yeah, the closed beta, it's going to run from May 22nd to June 4th in just two countries and only on Google Play. So whatever, but if you want to try and sign up.
You can't get it if you're in the U.S.? You have to be in a specific region?
Yeah, I guess so. That's how Google Play works. You have to, like, be there. So although I think there's ways around that. But yeah, we'll see what happens with this. But I think the important thing is they still have
And they haven't revealed pay model or anything, right?
No, they haven't revealed really anything, but they do still expect to arrive in summer. And so it sounds like they're probably going to do this beta and then very quickly launch after that, I would guess. I would feel like this is kind of like a final, one of the last final steps before launching. So really, unless they're going to bump it back.
I hope this game is good.
I hope so, too. I'm really curious to see what route they go, which my gut feeling tells me it's going to be a very pared down Mario Kart-y experience.
I feel like anything that they do, unless what they did was like they pick up the phone and called Rovio and are like, hey, what do we got to pay you guys to just do Angry Birds Go but Mario Kart?
Yeah.
Like if they did anything other than that, like this is going to be potentially disappointing.
What if it's CSR Racing but Mario Kart?
Well, that would be disappointing too, because CSR Racing is just kind of all right.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, but what if it's full-blown Mario Kart?
That would be
a super collection of every track in every Mario Kart ever.
What would seriously blow my mind is like if it was full-blown Mario Kart with like really smart local multiplayer, where like you could like be out with your friends and be like, hey, you want to do battle mode? And then be able to like do, you know, like old school Super Nintendo battle mode.
Yeah.
That'll never happen. So
I doubt it. The expect the worst and you won't be disappointed is my attitude with Nintendo's mobile stuff. But
yeah, that is for fucking sure.
I don't know. I'm still curious to see. Hopefully, even if it's not a full blown Mario Kart game or whatever, like a traditional style one, I hope it's at least something that's fun. Like, I thought Mario Run was really fun. I thought it got a really bad reputation right off the bat for what's actually a very well made game. So I'll be happy to deal with something like that. But I thought Pocket Camp sucked. So
I just got trolled in Golf Blitz by someone that was using my strategy of just fucking with everyone else.
Well, you deserved it then. So.
Yeah.
But anyway, Mario Kart Tour beta starts in May. And it's Android only. You can sign up for it. Just search for Mario Kart on Touch Arcade. You can find the sign up links and all that good stuff.
So is it live on Google Play then? Like if you search for Mario Kart on Google Play, does it come up or do you need the specific link?
No, I don't think there's anything live. I think the sign up just takes you to their website. So you can put your email in or whatever. And then when they start the email and they pick who they want in their beta, you'll get an email about it or whatever would be my guess. But let's just fact check this right now.
Fact check it live.
No, it doesn't look like it.
Nothing. Oh, like... yeah, first place. Eli wins the hole. Story
but
of my
there's
life.
Lol cart, if that does anything for you.
Does not.
No lol cart?
Absolutely not.
So anyway, moving along, we've got... this is a... If you remember Moof Games... they actually changed their name to 4Fats, and they have released games like the first game that got me hooked on them was Maximus, which was like a very silly Golden Axe style beat 'em up with a ton of characters that were all like super homages to like video game characters and stuff like that, and it was stuffed with all sorts of like pop culture and video game references and things. And then they've released a bunch of stuff since then. But one of their other games was called Blackmore, which was like a action platforming game that the combat was heavily inspired by like Street Fighter mechanics or whatever. So you could like throw fireballs and do dragon punches and all that good stuff. So anyway, Blackmore 2 came out last October or November, came out late last year. And it was another good action platforming game, super fun, tons of characters to play, a whole story mode and all this good stuff. You can even play co-op online with your friends, and it's just a super, super good game. Well, anyway, they always seem to have this sort of infatuation with fighting games, and especially like Street Fighter. And so what they've done is they've created this entirely separate game called Super Pub Fighter that uses all the characters from Blackmore 2. And makes essentially just a one-on-one fighting game where you fight through a ladder of all the other characters, and you fight bosses, and it's all modeled very closely after Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, right from like the character select screen to the world map where your little owl or hawk or whatever flies you to from city to city to fight people, to even like the game over screen where you have like the countdown number for you to continue or whatever. It's all just a massive riff on Street Fighter 2. And so it's a very good little fighting game in its own right. But what's kind of remarkable to me is that they released this just as like an extra mode in Blackmore 2, and they released it for free. So you're essentially getting like a whole separate game tacked on to this already good game. And it's this whole fighting game that has online multiplayer and everything, so you can battle your friends in it. And it's just this crazy thing that, I don't know, could have easily been like a separate game that you have to pay for or whatever, but instead it's part of a free update. So that was pretty shocking to me. So anyway, Blackmore 2 now has a huge fighting game mode called Super Pub Fighter. If you like Street Fighter or fighting games or any of the other MOOF or Four Fats games.
It's really weird they didn't just like release a different game or something like that. Like,
well, you know, they released a full-blown fighting game with all the characters from all their games. It was called Super Boys. They released that a few years ago, which was super good.
Yeah,
it was so much fun. And so when they started doing this, I was like, man, this could easily be its own separate game. But I think they like adding to their existing games because, you know, it just kind of drives the fan base and hopefully attracts new downloads and stuff like that. So anyway, definitely check this out. If you haven't played Blackmore 2 before, it's free, and you can kind of buy a premium unlock sort of stuff. All the other free-to-play stuff is pretty mellow, just kind of like grinding for unlocking characters and things like that, but super fun games.
Yeah, for sure.
Alien Black Isle is discounted to, I think, 99 cents today, right? What is Alien Day?
Oh, I don't know.
No, yeah, it's 99 cents, I'm pretty sure. So, Alien Day is apparently a thing, and apparently that's today. And because it's Alien Day, they've discounted Alien Blackout on mobile to $1. And if you don't remember, this is kind of like the Five Nights at Freddy's with an alien skin sort of thing. You're playing as Amanda Ripley, who was the main character in Alien Isolation. And you're directing these Marines through your little space station, trying to make them not get killed by the roving alien and also not get killed yourself. Surprisingly good. Like, everyone I know that plays this likes it. It's really good fan service, and it really just made people irrationally angry when it first came out because it wasn't Alien Isolation 2, which is what everyone wanted. So I think that now that we're a few months removed from,
I think this is the 40th anniversary of the release of Alien.
So today is Alien Day. So Alien, the original Alien released on this day 40 years ago.
Yeah, but there's also like, it references the planet LV-426 in the Aliens movie.
April 26th. Okay. Yeah, kind of makes sense.
Also, damn, they had really cool shoes for this that I missed that I totally probably would have looked at and then not bought.
Damn. Too bad. Too bad.
I need to.
But anyway, we're a few months removed from people being angry that this thing exists at all. And so, especially with it being on sale for so cheap, it's super worth picking up. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a really kind of immersive experience. And, you know, turn out the lights and throw some headphones on, and like, this is a killer little alien kind of side story thing. So
yeah. So today they released Reebok shoes that look like the shoes that Ripley like works out in.
No way.
They're selling for $275 on StockX.
Oh, that's it? You're gonna get those, aren't you?
No. Last year's were really cool too, but I always forget. I'm not into the sneaker scene. It's a little too hard for me to follow. I'm too stupid.
Yeah. Thankfully, I'm not into it either. So,
yeah.
Final news story I had to talk about was, so this guy contacted me a few weeks ago, and it kind of got lost in the shuffle with having a baby and all that stuff. But so this guy over the past year has been porting all of id Software's old games to iPhone. And if you don't know, like, so id Software's engines are called id Tech. And it started out with like Wolfenstein 3D way back in the early 90s. And then Doom and like Doom 2 and stuff used like the next version of the id Tech engine. And then it was like Quake 3, I think, was the next one to use a new version or whatever. All the way up to Doom 3, which came out in 2003 or 4, I want to say.
God, has it really been that long?
It feels like it. So anyway, Doom 3 was like id Tech 4. And so all the way up, all the engines all the way up to id Tech 4, id Software released as open source. And so basically that means the open source community can kind of like modify them and make their own games and make mods and blah, 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 you know, all that good stuff. And so even John Carmack years ago, when he ported Wolf 3D and Doom to the iPhone, he actually released those full iOS versions as open source too. Yeah. So people could like tweak them and mess with them and stuff. So anyway, as you probably know, the 32-bit cutoff killed a whole bunch of,
all the id games, right?
And it killed pretty much every id game. Yeah. None of them have been updated for 64-bit. I don't think, maybe Rage HD, but, Doom, Wolfenstein, those old ports are gone and not working anymore on iOS 11, aren't updated for the full screens of, you know, things like the iPhone 10 and whatever. Basically just busted and broken, and there's pretty much no hope of them coming back, because why should Bethesda give a shit? So anyway, this guy about a year ago was like, you know, that Wolf 3D port, I want to try and see if I can get it working on iOS 11, just as a challenge to myself, and because I'd like to play it again, and because it's open source and it's right there, so why not take a look at it? So he fiddled around with it, got it working on iOS 11, got it working full screen, got it working with MFI controllers. And then because the technology is so so related or so close to each other, he did Doom while he was at it too. And so he basically made these fully working on modern hardware versions of Wolf 3D and Doom. And then he was like, hey, I wonder if I can get these to work on Apple TV. He had seen someone else's project of porting iOS stuff to Apple TV. And so he looked into that and got it figured out to where he's got these games running on Apple TV now. And then so after that, he was like, damn, I wonder if I could port Quake to iPhone, because, you know, it's running in the same engine. It's like, I kind of know what I'm doing now, whatever. Ported Quake, and then Quake 2, Quake 3, returned to Castle Wolfenstein, which was also done on the Quake 3 engine, I believe. And then finally, the most recent thing he's done is Doom 3 on the id Tech 4 engine. And so it's pretty remarkable that, like, over the past year, it's like, you know, he'd spend a couple months on each project or depending on how long each one took or whatever. But it's been about a year for him to get all of these things going all the way up to Doom 3. And so if you look through on our story, there's a link to his website where you can go to the GitHub for all the source downloads for all these updated versions of all these games, which aren't just the games themselves. It has none of the copyrighted, you know, actual game files included in them, but they are the iOS builds that will work. And if you own a copy of the game, you can extract the right files you need to make things work. The only problem is you actually have to have a Mac, and you have to have a version, or you have to have Xcode. You have to have an Apple developer's license. And you can take all the work that he's done from his GitHub and compile it yourself and run it on your very own personal device, just so you can have it running. But it's kind of a few hoops to jump through. And also, I don't believe those builds last very long. I think you have to renew them like once every 7 days or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Anyway, it's not a super ideal way to do it. But if you wanted to right now, this minute, you could essentially get all these games working on your iPhone, which is pretty crazy. My main thing is I wanted to just post about this because I think it's interesting that this guy's just kind of taking this on as a hobby. He's a full-time developer with a day job. He's just been doing this kind of nights and weekends hobby style.
What does he do for a day job?
Felt like it.
Do you know?
What's that?
Do you know what he does for a day job?
I don't know what company, but he's a mobile developer for a big company. But
look him up on
LinkedIn. Yeah, what's that?
I'm gonna look him up on LinkedIn.
Mystery. Oh, go ahead. I didn't LinkedIn, so I didn't do any of that. But anyway,
LinkedIn sucks.
Just a badass thing that he's not only brought those old games that id had already brought to mobile, like Wolfenstein and Doom, but also brought the Quakes and also brought Return to Castle Wolfenstein, which is like a Xbox title, which is like even, you know, crazier than the old desktop stuff they were doing. And then Doom 3, which was like at the time just a graphical showpiece game. And it runs perfectly on iPhone and Apple TV and works with MFI controllers. And it's just like this such a glorious, awesome thing that I just wish Bethesda would see this and be like, damn, this guy's done all the work. Let's just give him a stamp of approval and release these things for $10 a piece. Who cares? And, you know, see what happens. It's basically just free money. But I feel like companies like Bethesda, even free money, if it's not free millions, then they don't care.
That's if the it's problem. Like,
oh, you can make a cool 100,000 just selling these mobile games and basically have nothing to do on your end. They're still going to be like, pass.
Yeah, so, I kind of run into that problem with Game Club in a way, in that like a lot of these studios have these old games that people really like. You know, it's like the time it would take their legal department to figure everything out is more expensive than the game would probably ever make.
I believe
you
that.
Know, so it's kind of weird and unfortunate.
At least in the case of id, like, you know, you look back at their Wolf and Doom ports on the iPhone, they were a big deal and they were like, you know, played really well on the touchscreen. Yeah. So even like the staunch sort of touchscreen control hater people were like, you know, these played really fun and it was fun to have, you know, Wolf and Doom in your pocket whenever you wanted. So I feel like if they were like, oh, look, our entire like this basically like 10-year history of our games from the early 90s to the early 2000s is now mobile ports. I feel like that would generate a lot of buzz from like kind of the mainstream audience and the mainstream gaming press and stuff, to the point that it probably would be worth it for him to do something like that. I mean, you look at stuff like Christian Whitehead with his Sonic CD port, right? Like what would have happened if Sega had been like, just shut it all down, just stop what you're doing, you're not allowed, blah, blah, blah. We don't care. We would have never got Sonic Mania. We would have never got the remastered versions of the Sonic games that they did. And so I feel like this could lead down that same sort of road where it's like, man, this is a huge gaming company's, a hugely influential gaming company's history that would be really fun to be able to have on mobile. Like we talked about a few weeks ago when Marathon got updated. Yeah. It's like so fun to go back and play Marathon and see the roots of Bungie. I feel like it's the same thing with id Software where you can go back and play all their old games. Oh, and by the way, I didn't even mention this in the story, but the online works for all the online games.
Are you fucking
kidding?
And
so you can actually like host your own servers and play multiplayer with other people that have the game and stuff like that. So I feel like there's so much potential for doing cool things with this if they wanted to. So I don't know. We'll see if anything ever comes from that. But I guess at the very least, if you're enterprising enough and have the right equipment, such as like a Mac and a Xcode and all that good stuff, you can follow the steps and try and get this stuff running on your phone. But it sure would be nice if I could just give Bethesda my money and download it from the App Store with no fuss.
Yeah, for so, sure. I mean, that seems
that ever happens.
Really cool. Huh.
Yeah.
That's a neat story. That's anyway, a neat find. Neat find of the week.
Right. Do you run it short on time?
Yeah, let's close this out so I can get out of here.
I don't want you to be late.
Yeah.
Okay, so with that, we'll go ahead and shut this podcast down. We're going to drive this bus off the side of the freeway. Thank you so much.
Perform updates and then shut down if you're using Windows. Perform updates and shut down.
Thanks so much for listening this week. As I said at the top of the hour, in a very scattered manner, if you like what Touch Arcade is doing, then please check us out on patreon.com/TouchArcade, where you can support us for as little as a dollar and get a cool video version of this very podcast where you can see all the games we're playing and the news stories we're talking about and see our awesome faces. And if you want to support us in an additional way, you can do your Amazon shopping through toucharcade.com/Amazon, where we'll get a little tiny slice of anything you'd be buying on Amazon anyway. And it goes, adds up and goes a big way towards helping keeping Touch Arcade going.
I bought
and
of cat course, litter.
What's that?
I bought cat litter this week.
Buy that cat litter, buy that toilet paper, buy anything you can and keep that money out of Jeff Bezos' pocket. and of course, one of the biggest things you can do that helps Touch Arcade is just tell people about it, especially people that you might know want to play mobile games but just don't know where to go to find the good ones. That's kind of what TetraCade tries to do is find the best mobile games for you to play in the sea of crap that's out there. So definitely spread the word. And to all our loyal readers and listeners and watchers, thank you so much. And we will see you on another episode of Touch Arcade Show next week.
Hey, wait, before you, did you see the Avengers?
No. No.
You have a baby. How would you see Avengers?
No, I have not seen the Avengers, and I've seen one of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies.
God, what is wrong with you?
I've always wanted to watch them all and get caught up, but...
And you don't watch Game of Thrones, right?
Watch Game of Thrones.
All right, well, I got nothing for you then.
I'm terrible.
All right.
All right, you can chastise me next week. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
See ya.